What up, witches, and welcome to Witching and Bitching, a podcast. I'm your host, Darren.
And I'm Vicky. How are you all today? I hope you're doing super, super well.
I am, actually. Thank you for asking, Vicky. So, viewers and listeners, we've got something really special for you today. So, before we introduce our guests, we're actually going to throw straight to Theo in order to do an acknowledgement of country. So, please enjoy.
Okay, so... in so-called Australia, there is an ancient protocol that is called Acknowledgement of Country that really anyone can and ought to do, including Aboriginal people. I am not an Aboriginal person, but this is something that I've been encouraged to do and asked to do. And this is something we do to acknowledge that we are guests, to acknowledge the continued devastating systemic effects of colonization and invasion and occupation in this country, and also to acknowledge the strength, survival, and thriving of First Nations and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities and cultures. Mm-hmm. So it's not just acknowledging sad things, which are real, but acknowledging strong things as well, and acknowledging also the ancestors and the old people. So I invite you to notice that you are a living, breathing creature and who is intrinsically connected to the web of life. And in doing so, gather your attention as you would if you were beginning to do ritual or anything that's important to you. And bring your attention to your connection with country, with land, with place, with the indwelling sacred nature of place. And this includes the sky, the sea, the stars, the mycelial web, everything that we cannot see and we can see. And I acknowledge that I am in the unceded lands, sovereign lands of the Gadigal and Bidjigal peoples. And I acknowledge their elders, past, present, and emerging. I acknowledge that colonization and invasion has had very real disastrous impact on the people of this place, on the traditional owners, but also all the other beings of this place, the riverways, the trees, everything. And I acknowledge the power, the politics, the art, the ceremony, the healing, the kinship, the beauty and the pain and the joy and the wonder of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and systems of being. And I acknowledge the old people and the dreaming, and I acknowledge the mystery. Blessed be.
Blessed be.
Thank you so much. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
That you definitely was. Have a way with words. I feel like I'm in a different headspace
now. Yeah. Yep.
That was beautiful. So I hope now I feel a little bit subdued in my energy now. I'm like really feeling the feels. Whew. Thank you. So obviously, now I'm going to go to the introductions. So Theo G'day Palmer is a Balinese Australian witch, spirit worker, healer, professional spellcaster and reader, and award-winning author. They are an active initiate of the Wildwood Reclaiming and Anderson Ferry traditions. And Theo has written, co-authored and co-edited 6 books and is currently finalizing a new book, which you're going to get some inside information on very soon. And they currently reside on the Gadigal and Bidjigal country in so-called Sydney, and live with their partner, their beautiful cat, Medea. Mm-hmm. Was it Medea? Medea?
Oh, I love it.
And with many shrines and spirits. So please welcome Theo.
Yay!
Thanks for having me. Thanks for, yeah, this is great. Awesome.
So obviously you're where you're based, as most people would refer to it as Sydney. So you're currently in lockdown at the moment?
Yeah, where I am, we are in our 10th week of lockdown.
Wow. Well, yeah. My heart goes out to you. Like coming from Melbourne, I've done the long haul. I think we did 111 days as our longest lockdown last year. Yeah. And we're currently in our 6th lockdown. So my heart goes out to you because I know it's tough. Okay. It definitely gets you to analyze self and things and relationships. Yeah.
Totally. So, yeah. I mean, I'm grateful for the fact that I can walk, like in 15 minutes, I can go from my front door to the ocean. So
beautiful.
I'm grateful for that.
Oh,
yeah, definitely. Because that's what you need. You just need that change of space, something beautiful, mm-hmm. that fresh air, that different vibe. So very grateful that you have that. Definitely.
Yeah. Are you all in lockdown still?
I'm in Adelaide, so we're not.
Oh.
Yes.
Adelaide, we're
allowed free. Yes. We have little ones. We've only ever had a couple of little ones, thankfully. We've been very, very lucky. Mm. So yes, I'm very much enjoying my freedom, and also very much it's actually made me think about it a lot more and appreciate it a lot more, especially because I talk to Darren, like we talk all the time, and being in lockdown, how much that can affect you, whatever. So I do appreciate it a lot.
It really makes you kind of lose yourself before you find yourself, and then you lose yourself again and then find yourself.
Well,
it's kind of like this roller coaster. So that's why I'm actually glad for my spiritual practice, because that's probably been the one thing that kept me through.
Yeah.
It kept me sane and sorted this whole time. So, but anyway, I didn't want to start us off in a down mood, but I just know that it's tough for everyone up in Sydney at the moment.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, definitely, because you guys have been hit the hardest at the moment.
Yeah.
So let's bring it back. Let's go back to the witching world. Sure. So we often start our podcast this way and with all of our guests. And this is just your personal opinion. It's not meant for the wider community as such, but it's just for you. And what is your sort of personal definition? Or what does it mean to you to be a modern day witch? What is that?
Okay.
What does that look like?
So for me, I'm pretty specific about it, actually, but the specificity is also meant to be broad. So my definition of a witch throughout time is pretty much the same. So a witch is a person who is an otherworldly interruption into human society. And so this being is usually standing in opposition to empire or into, standing in opposition to systems that dominate, coerce, and control. And the power of a witch, like, because there's all kind, as we know, there's all kinds of magic workers. But a witch is a very specific kind of magic worker. She or he or they were usually people who understand what it means to be downtrodden on some level, or understand what it means to be marginalized or oppressed. Our magic comes up from the common people. And it comes from the non-human, which is what I meant by otherworldly interruption. And it often happens to us. Like, sometimes witch magic just kind of happens. Like, there's a lot of other kinds of magic that you have to organize and think ahead of time and prepare for. And certainly witches do that kind of magic. But witch magic kind of seizes you. It takes you. It moves through us like an animal, like a beast. So a witch is basically a kind of an ecstatic transgressive spirit worker who has an intimate or erotic relationship with the spirits and is able to bend and weave fate almost as if that witch was a spirit. So that therein lies the rub. Lots of societies fear witches because we act like spirits, and that can become, that can be very uncomfortable to people.
You've given me tingles.
Yeah, that was beautiful. I love that. And I love how you just then at the end, how you likened it to spirits and being spirits sort of this waking world.
Yes.
And there's where a lot of that fear can come from. So that's, I don't know. That was just amazing. Thank you.
You definitely have a way with words. I'm glad you're an author.
Definitely. Yes.
So glad that you're an author.
Yeah.
Because this is a thing like this, and I know I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, but anyone that listens to the show knows that I love a good tangent. Like, this is the one thing that I've noticed with your writing style.
Yeah.
Like, I've got one of the books here by Land, Sky and Sea. And one of the things I love about your writing style is that it's always, I mean, I don't know where it comes from. I guess maybe it will come up in your origin story, but you've got this really poetic and very educated stance on a lot of things. And it's not just, I mean, I see a lot of Witchcraft 101 books and it's very watered down, and anyone who can pick up a pen will start writing and But what I like about yours is it feels so much more intrinsic and like well felt out, not just thought out, but felt out. Yeah,
like comes from within.
Yeah, it's not just this la-di-da, let me just create a book and, you know, make some money. So anyway, I just thought I'd do a little plug there.
Well, thank you.
But
So following on from that, do you use the word witch or any other kind of titles, or for want of a better word, labels?
Yeah, like I definitely am a witch. Like I just I happen to be a witch. Just like, you know, you know.
Yep.
Like some people just are witches, and whether or not those people choose to identify or declare that's the difference, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some people are just nascent witches, and you know, in past times and even countries today, this can be fortunate or unfortunate. People are called witches by their community, and there are still places in the world where people are killed for it, like Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, definitely.
Different African nations. And it's not so easy in different regions of Australia or the US or in different European nations or Brazil. Like there's still a lot of, as I said, fear and suspicion. Mm. I definitely am very privileged to live in a country where I can say it and write about it and teach publicly about it and not fear reprisal. You know, when the first Western witches were coming out in the 1950s and the 1960s, like some of them were very economically privileged, so they got away with it. But some of them, you know, they had their houses bricked in, they had their children taken away, they lost their jobs. You know, they tried not to publish their names in the papers, but journalists figured it out. So I'm really thankful to those witches of the 50s and 60s and 70s in the West who were very audacious and very tried to educate people and try to strike a balance between telling some of it and keeping some of the sacred stuff sacred, because you know, it's important to be able to share what needs to be shared and wrap in silence what is preserved in silence, you know? like any mystery tradition. So I definitely use that word because it just is simple and true. I go back and forth between using pagan. I don't think that you have to be a pagan to be a witch. You know, like a witch to me is a kind of a spirit worker and a cultist. They could be a Christian. They could be a Muslim. They could be a Buddhist. They could be an atheist, probably. So pagan witches, you know, obviously pagan witches exist and did exist and do exist. There's a differentiation for me between like modern pagan or neo-pagan, which is usually capitalized, and pagan or heathen, which is like an English term which we just use. And certainly I happen to be a heathen or a pagan, but more in a cultural sense, more in a, I guess, a theological sense than in a religious, than in a modern religious sense. So I can say, you know, with the recent census, I put pagan because in the religion section, even though I don't consider it my religion, but to be in political solidarity with the pagan so that they would count that, right? Because those statistics and data can actually change things. So I also spirit worker is a word I use, and it's a nice broad term. Lots of people work with spirits. And seer is something I do a lot. Diviner, professional magician, service magician is a term that seems to be becoming more popular at the moment with people who do service magic.
Yeah,
I love it. Yeah. I love it. You literally, it's almost like you've got many hats that you can interchangeably put on or take off when you need to. And obviously, I think it's being smart as a witch is to know when to kind of. Not necessarily that I'm saying that, like, you know, I think it's something that I've grown up with being a gay person. It's like, you know, when to kind of turn on your persona and when to kind of turn off your persona. Yeah. And it's not that you're not being true to self. It's just that, you know, there's a time and a place.
Yeah. And then danger.
I was going to say, it's like a preservation thing as well. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, when I meet people who I don't know, I do not say anything about me being a witch. And also I generally don't tell them what I do for work. Like if I'm in an Uber and they ask, "Oh, what do you do?" I'm like, "Oh, I teach meditation."
Yeah.
I won't even say I read tarot cards, because even that with the wrong person can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I've tried that once, and then I realized that my t-shirt was like blazing something witchy on it, and I'm like, oh, that, I can't fool anyone.
No, I was gonna say, no, that one's a bit out there. It's all good.
Yeah, but I actually wanted to take us on a bit of a journey, if you will, back to your origin story. So telling, because I know that obviously we mentioned in your bio that being Balinese Australian, and I know I've read that you come from a family of healers. Mm-hmm. So I was wanting to know, are you able to give our viewers and listeners a little bit of an insight as to how did Theo start, and where, how did Theo get to where they are now?
Yeah, so definitely having a background in animism and ceremony and magic helped. But mm-hmm. it's weird, I didn't really, like that was just always there. So I didn't really consciously connect it to witchcraft.
Yeah.
You know, because it was just there. So, but it definitely helped. There are many concepts that I didn't have to I didn't have to decolonize or unravel stuff. I was just like, oh, spirits exist. Like, I didn't have to make myself believe in anything.
Yep.
And I think that's what I love about witchcraft. There's no, actually, you can get through it without believing a fucking thing.
Yeah, know? That's true.
It's a lot of technique. It's a lot of practice. It's a lot of observation. But so, you know, I was 11 when I knew I was a witch. And it took me a few years to figure out what that meant for me. But like, definitely in high school, I was a very serious, earnest practitioner. And I would read read fucking anything. Anything that had witch on it, I would read it. Fiction, nonfiction, I would look at it. I would try to figure it out. And certainly in the early 2000s, you would find a lot of stuff at the time that was basically some form of eclectic Wicca,
mm-hmm.
maybe with other things in it.
Yeah.
And I just knew that it wasn't me. So I was searching for other stuff. And, you know, with I started to realize that there was another thing. So there were, like, I started to have some kind of understanding. Okay, so there's Gardnerians and Alexandrians, and they belong to an initiatory Wicca, which is, you know, oath-bound, and it's that's their stuff, and not really for me from what I understand about it. And then I started to find out that there was folkloric and traditional witches, and I know these definitions can overlap and there's so much debate, but there, mm-hmm. and then there's another kind of witchcraft that is more land-based, ecstatic, sorceress, dual faith. It often has a lot of Christian iconography in it, and that drew me much more. It felt more mystical. It felt more true to what was already going on inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And certainly in high school, spirits started to come. Like, if you lean in, then they will lean in, you know?
Yeah.
And so my familiar spirit started to come to me, and they were my primary teachers at the time, you know, which is traditional. Like, it's the witch is initiated by their familiar spirits. We make pacts with our familiar spirits. And then it's the witch gods, these gods that I started to understand as the witch gods, of which there are many, started to come to me. Persephone, who is my soul goddess, which is a term I coined because I couldn't find a term in English that made, like, some people use patron deity, but this feels more deep than that. I do have patron deities, but I have a soul goddess. And so it's, for me, I can't tell where I end and she begins sometimes. That's what I mean. Like, she's like the backdrop of my mythic self. So Persephone, in year 12, I dedicated myself to her as her priestess. And then I helped to found a coven the year after I left high school with a bunch of other witches who were around my age, 18, 19, 20. There were a bunch of us who came together, and we were all very, like, very into witchcraft. And I'd moved to Brisbane by that point, and we were not interested in any of the groups available. We weren't interested in eclectic Wicca. We weren't interested in any of the groups that we knew were around that we could have sought with. And so we formed a coven out of what we were getting from the spirits,
mm-hmm.
and out of our knowledge and our research, right? All the ways you can research, you know, we know we can research through trance, through divination, through archives, through books, through whatever. There's so many ways to research. And so we formed a coven, which we called the Coven of the Wildwood, which since then, we never intended to form a tradition of witchcraft, but since then has formed a tradition of witchcraft that has initiates in many countries and different parts of the world, and is growing all the time. And so that was my initiation into initiatory coven-based witchcraft. And then I began to meet other witches who helped to cross-pollinate with our tradition, who helped to corroborate a lot of our lore that we were getting directly from the spirits in really intense ways. And so that helped grow the virtue of the tradition. And also it helped, you know, it always helps when there's people who are part of a tradition that do have some family background in magic, the virtue of that ancestral line passes in. So that helps to weave the warp and weft of a tradition. So I would say that our tradition formed like most other contemporary witchcraft traditions formed in the past 70 to 80 years, like a group of people who are drawn in by the spirit, synchronicity, omens, some of whom already practice and have family connections to magic and spirit work, basically pool all their stuff together, and then, you know, magic happens. And so then I met other witches and I started publishing books because I've always been really passionate about the word and how to express with the word in a way that actually changes consciousness, which I think is one of the prime gifts of the witch. If we, you know, whether we're doing it alone or publicly or semi-publicly, it doesn't matter. So I started writing, and through writing, I started traveling the world teaching. And through doing that, I met many witches. And in that way, I actually ended up being initiated in other traditions. And that has, you know, I work in those traditions and I teach in those traditions. And for me, a witch doesn't need to be in a tradition to be a witch. We know that to be true. I know that to be true. But I was drawn to these traditions, you know, and the gods and the spirits and the current and the flavors and the cultures of those traditions sing to me. So, you know, I put in blood, sweat, and tears and years and years and years of study and dedication and became initiated in reclaiming and fairy and another small British witchcraft tradition that's based in Tasmania. And, you know, all of this kind of pours through my being. And it was kind of a few years later after I first started practicing to double back that I was like, oh yeah, my grandparents and my dad are spirit workers. Like, again, it wasn't like I'd forgotten, but I was like, oh yeah. And because I don't call them witches though out of cultural respect, right?
Yep.
Some of my Balinese relatives who speak English do, but that's for them, you know? Like, yep. I was born in Bali, but I was mainly raised here. My parents are still married. My father lives in Bali. I don't think I've ever met another person who has the situation I have where my parents live in different countries most of the time, but are monogamous and still married. I've never met, like, most people who know me for years assume my parents are divorced.
Yeah.
You know, but they're not. Like, my mum lives in Australia, he lives there, and maybe for 2 months out of the year they're together.
Wow. You know,
I've never met anyone else like that. But growing up, I would go back and forth to Bali, and I, you know, Bali is a place that many people are fascinated by because the culture is so embedded. And ceremony, offerings, gods, possession, divination, magic, it's just everywhere.
Yeah.
And some of it's just there for you to see, but a lot of it is hidden and you would never know it was there. So it's because I have that background, I have this pretty emotional understanding of what it means to be a spirit worker, what it means to, like, my father just sometimes just says random shit to us without us asking. Like, he's like, oh, last night I flew with dragons. We're like, oh, okay. And because I know what that means, I'm like, okay,
cool,
whatever, you know, and, you know, oh, you know, the other day I was walking down the road and this god came to me, and I'm, you know, like the way witches talk to each other. So certainly if my father and his parents happen to be doing what they're doing in France or in Italy, they would be called witches, right? But I still don't call them that. I definitely, you know, I definitely come from a line of people who are spirit workers. Not everyone in Bali is a spirit worker, but, you know, there are families who are known for it, just like there are families in many cultures who are known for it. So that, you know, it helps to have that background in my soul story. And when I'm teaching or mentoring people, I always say to them, look, if you're a witch, it's so likely that there were people who could have been called witches in your line. Some of them blocked it, denied it because of religious piety and fear. Mm-hmm. Some of them didn't even know what was happening to them and just pretended it didn't happen. And maybe it actually was a few generations ago and your family didn't even know or doesn't talk about it. But almost every witch I know, and I've met tons of witches in the world, like, they eventually, once they get the context of that and they realize, oh, so you're not talking about like a pagan witch that worships the goddess. I'm like, no, I'm talking about a witch. They, you know, and they might not have known or ever called themselves that. They could have been the best Christian in the world, but they made things happen. They dreamed true. They flew at night. They could, you know, use the Psalms and change things, you know. So,
yeah,
you know, that probably was there in your line, and that's important to think about and look up. But again, I hesitate to say, you know, even though I have this story, I think it's important to say it's not the story for every witch. And some of the most skilled, powerful witches I know come from families of agnostics and atheists.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's, witches appear anywhere.
Yeah.
Like we just appear wherever we're needed, really.
Yeah, that's it.
So that's some of the spiraling. Like these stories are so non-linear.
Yeah. 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 Definitely. Yeah. With that, I'd love to just ask you quickly, when you said about that you do mentoring and workshops and things like that as well, because I know you are, for want of a better, a professional witch. How does that kind of impact your own personal practice? Like, is there sort of those parts? Because I know just being a yoga teacher, and there's been a very big difference that I've almost realized I've lost a little bit of that. That's just for me. Do you kind of struggle with that sometimes, or are you good with kind of creating that space for still keeping that part for you as well? That's not public.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm an imperfect human. Sometimes, yes. I find, wow, I'm actually doing it. I'm somehow seamlessly, synergistically weaving this really well.
Yeah.
Other times I'm so aware that I've lost that part that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad and then usually I'm like, "Oh, I've lost it," and then I find my way back.
Yep.
But it's cycles, it's seasons for me. And certainly though, I look at my teaching and my mentoring as practice, as personal practice. And often it makes me, like, because I loathe hypocrisy. It's one of the things I loathe. And so for me, if I'm, you know, fully engaging someone in a process, like I do one-on-one mentorship, and so often I'm like leading people through soul alignment, or leading people through spell work, or leading people through ritual. So usually I'm doing it too. So so while I'm drumming, I'm drumming someone in a trance or something, I'm also doing it. So often teaching and mentoring actually gives me this massive space to do all of the same things I'm facilitating with someone else, which is wonderful. And I totally know what you mean. Sometimes in the discipline and the professional kind of thing of it all, you know, I'm trying to put my all into it. I'm trying to be as thorough as possible. Like, I have this this value on thoroughness.
Yeah.
But then sometimes I'm like, oh shit. What about me? So I notice that I have a lot of baths. So I'm lucky to live in places usually with a bathtub. It's like one of my things. And so usually I summon, like, basically after all of my work, I usually go to the bathtub, I align my souls, I ground, I call up the spirits, and I plunge my hands into the water, and I start to call the attention of all my gods and ancestors to be in the water with me. As we know, water is a great communicator. And then I just lay in the bath, and sometimes I just lay there and just let it happen, or sometimes I trance journey, or sometimes I do some aspecting work. But yeah, so I maintain a daily practice, but sometimes even that daily practice is simply so I'm not a hypocrite.
Yeah.
So that's, but you know, that works out. You know,
I was going to say, it still has the same benefit at the end.
Yeah, it works out. There's still that accumulative diligence, I would say.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. But I think the things that actually connect me are having those baths, going for witches' walks, you know, where you wander out and you just let the world do things to you.
Yeah.
You know, and I do a lot of, I notice that actually what the thing I probably do the most is divination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I divine a lot. So I'm constantly getting out my tarot, my runes, I work with the Oum staves as well. That's a more recent addition, but I'm just constantly divining. It's one of the ways I talk to the spirits. I'm like, you know, I hold them up and I say, you know, Aphrodite, or, you know, I work a lot with the angelic powers, you know, communicate to me through these cards, you know, that kind of thing. I find that very useful, actually.
Mm. I think nothing beats a good daily card draw. I actually have multiple decks that I like, all my decks. So Vicky laughs at me because I'll draw like one card a day, but from a several decks.
Yeah.
It's not one card anymore. I'm like, no, but for me, that's also another layer of divination, because it's like sometimes I've had an instance where this same card, the exact same card, has come up in multiple decks. And I'm like,
yeah,
okay, I'm clearly not listening. They're now yelling at me, like, pay attention. But there's so many different angles I could take what we've just been unpacking now. Firstly, I love the fact that you do work in the bath, because as someone who does that regularly, like I rate it highly on my list of must-dos. A lot of people look at me funny. They're like, what, you go into trance meditation in the bathtub? Aren't you scared you're going to drown? I'm like,
no.
It's not a pool. Like, it's a bath. Like, I'm wedged in.
You're not
in
falling
like,
asleep.
No.
Yeah,
no.
That's it.
But also, it's like the way I'm propped up, like, there's no way for me to drown. But anyway, yeah. So I actually want to take us back a little bit, only because we've spoken about like so many ways I can take this. Okay, let's go back to the beginning a little, sure. Not quite the beginning, but a little bit in there. When we're talking about reclaiming Wildwood and Anderson Ferry, because we've had a few guests on this show that are all from the Anderson Ferry background.
Okay.
But we have not had anyone from Wildwood. So we'd love to obviously explore that, but also reclaiming.
Sure.
So what would be, I guess, the elevator pitch, for lack of a better word, of reclaiming and Wildwood? Like, what kind of defines them in as simple terms as possible? And obviously, we're not expecting you to be the gospel of all things.
No, I can't be. Oh, yeah, no. Of course.
Just if someone was listening to this and they're like, oh, that sounds fascinating. What is that about?
Yeah. So actually, as I had mentioned previously, what's fascinating is like one of the appendices in this new book that I just finished the first draft of is I basically go through and I describe the traditions that I'm aligned with at the end of the book, so that people can have some context for some of the stuff I'm saying.
Yeah.
Though the book is not about any of those traditions, because I'm from those traditions, it determines how I speak.
Yeah.
Let's start with reclaiming. So reclaiming is an anarchist, eco-feminist, open source witchcraft tradition. It's one of the few contemporary witchcraft traditions that doesn't require you to go through formal initiation in order to fully participate. Almost every other witchcraft lineage or tradition requires that.
Yeah.
Reclaiming developed in the late 70s, early 80s. The probably the most famous member is, of course, Starhawk, who is one of the co-founders. And she was originally initiated by Victor and Cora Anderson. So there's a large route magical style and ethos that comes directly from fairy into reclaiming. So we in reclaiming, the reclaiming ethos is that anyone can learn how to do magic. Anyone.
Yep.
And also that magic and spirit and politics are all wrapped up together. Mm-hmm. And so the witch's work is in the world. You know, the witch's work is in the world. And so we have a feminist ethos too, which means we have a critique of the systems of power. So that's the same as having a queer theory critique or a critical race theory critique or an anti-capitalist critique. But we bring that into it. And we teach only in shared, you can't teach reclaiming alone. So you have to have, you always have to do it with another person to model shared power in terms of initiation. Whereas in some initiatory traditions, you can just have one teacher. In reclaiming, you have to, if you do ask for initiation, which there is initiation, you have to have at least two, but ideally like three or four. I had six people initiate me into reclaiming. So you often have huge teams. We run these things called witch camps, which are these huge magical intensives. They're not retreats. They're like boot camps.
Yeah.
They're very intense. Like I've gone to lots of different kinds of magical conferences and pagan festivals. I've never been to anything like a witch camp. It's really intense. You're just doing magic and processing and ritual all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
It's really powerful. Like I recommend them. There's about 25 that happen in different parts of the world. But it's a very kind of liberationist witchcraft.
Yeah.
And it's very empowering in the sense that it gives you all the tools you need through the core classes. We have these series of classes that you can find in different communities where there are reclaiming teachers. And you do have to be trained to be a reclaiming teacher. So you can't just suddenly teach it. You have to go through them. You have to be a student teacher. Then you teach. Like there is a process. So it can't just be anyone can set up shop and do it. But But we teach Elements of Magic, which teaches the basic foundational skills of elemental magic and how to do ritual on your own, how to do ritual in a group, how to invoke a spirit, how to shapeshift, how to raise power, like how to sense energy. Like that's where that is, how to cast a circle, how to ground. And then we have Iron and Pearl Pentacle, which comes from the fairy tradition through our tradition, which is Iron Pentacle work is like shadow stalking work. Usually we'd say something like that. It's demon dancing work. It shakes you up to your foundation and makes you strong. And then the pearl is like what flowers from that work. We also have Rites of Passage, which is a strangely named class, but basically it's a class that teaches the skills of coven craft. And it teaches you how to help another person go into a trance. Like one of the things that reclaiming is excellent at is inducting trance states. And one of the other things that it's really good at as a tradition is ecstatic power raising. I've never seen a cone of power like that before. Like it's intense. Like it melts the skin off, kind of intense. And we also, in reclaiming, we work with story and myth in a very profound, personal, political, and magical way. So those are all parts of reclaiming. In Wildwood is like other traditions where you do have to be initiated. You do have to find an initiate who's willing to teach you. Yep. So there are plenty of people who've asked me about Wildwood, and I'm like, I can only say so much, unfortunately. Like, none of my books are about the tradition, but they're infused with the tradition. Certainly any book I've written alone is infused with it. But it's a tradition, I would say, that is tied to the Wildwood. We're named for the Witch's Forest, for that place that we have a saying that the Wildwood belongs to all witches, but some witches belong to the Wildwood. And so the Wildwood is this like otherworldly, innerworldly, allworldly place where all of the forests go to when they're taken from this world. But it is also the forests of this world, paradoxically. Like if you, it's hard to explain, but it's the witch's forest. It's the witch's place. Any witch can go there, but our tradition is named for it. And we do have four gods that are the center of our cultus of practice, and they really do describe much of who we are and what we do. So there's the Grandmother Weaver, who is Old Fate, who is everything and nothing. She's the great luminous blackness of all things, and she's the stars, but she's also the old hag who grinds the bones of the ancestors and makes the stars. She's the black sow who eats her young. She's the hole in the stone. She's the cauldron, that kind of thing. And we have the grandfather, or the old god, who is like, we also call him the green man. He is the face and the form of her mystery. He is everything that can touch you and everything that is touched by us, everything that we sense and everything that senses us. He is the door that is birth and death. He is the breath that we breathe in and the breath that we give back. And then we have the lady and the devil, or the young god. We call them many names. Obviously, we have inner names for them that are passed at initiation. That's an important part of many witchcraft initiations. But these are our witching gods. They are the ones who sponsor us. They are the ones who hold us in our craft. Wildwood magic is very sorcerously texturous. It's very, like, our rituals could look like some traditions have very, like, this is the way the ritual is, right?
Yep.
Whereas that's not true in Wildwood. Many of us have ritual liturgies that we all know. We have chants we all know. We have songs. We have litanies that we all know. But you could just light a candle and go into deep trance and travel, you know, journey to the Wildwood and have your experience. Or it might be more formal. There might be a compass or a circle or a crossroads. Some Wildwood witches work strongly with dual faith heresy. The branch of Wildwood that I belong to is strongly influenced by Gnosticism and dual faith Christianity. So, you know, on our shrines, you would see icons of Mary. You would see icons of the saints. You would see, you know, so that's a big part of some Wildwood practice. Other Wildwood witches are more pagan. So it's quite diverse, but we do meet somewhere. There are pieces of our tradition that we all dance around. All of those traditions, Anderson Ferry, Reclaiming, Wildwood, they have websites. You can look them up. But But yeah, it's complex to talk, I think, about any witchcraft tradition.
Yeah.
Because they're so, you know, I try my best to point to the things, the, you know, the core pieces, but how I'm saying it is different, obviously, to how another person will say it. But also they're very mysterious because it's because we're talking about witchcraft.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
So it's complex to define. So it's more like we're trying to describe a taste, or we're trying to describe an image that we see clearly.
It's that, because it's that really felt sense. It's kind of beyond words a little bit with everything, how you are. It's whatever it is for you. It's that beyond it all. So were you actually one of the founders of the Wildwood tradition?
Yes. Yeah, so
and
I
what's
don't
that big
term.
No. Okay.
What I'll say is I am a founder of the Coven of the Wildwood.
Yep.
And some of us will use the term midwife. And we
that.
And we use that. So sometimes people will say, oh, like sometimes I can look at one of my fellow initiates and go, oh, this is a midwife of the tradition. We use that term more so because of our experience of it. You know, when people talk about founding something, it's almost like they had the idea.
Yes.
That's not our experience.
Yeah.
So when we say midwife, we turned up to...
kind of birthed it into the world. Yeah.
We watched it happen. And it was whole and complete unto itself. Like, you know, it's like watching something from a long time ago. Like, this is truly my experience. When something from long ago becoming reborn.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why we use the word midwife, because I know in my heart that this existed before, and that I was just lucky enough to find it again.
Yeah. You know?
So that's why we say midwife. And now, because of the way initiatory lineage works, there are people in like the fifth and sixth generation of initiation.
Yeah.
And we might say, oh, we're all midwives. We all find the tradition together. But yeah, now there are people who look at the people who were there and
go, there is that kind of lineage to it.
Totally.
Yeah. And how does that feel to be a part of that? Do you know what I mean? Like to be
midwifery.
A part of to be sort of that part of that original birthing and nourishing.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Weird. It's weird because I didn't intend it. I didn't mean for it. So it's like I'm sure some deep part of me did, but the conscious parts of me, like it's very strange. I don't know how to fully articulate it either, because even though I was as a founder of the original coven, because of how traditions work and because of how there's so many stories that are like rivers that feed a tradition and people's lives and people's heartbreaks and people's initiations. Like when you're initiated, that changes you and it changes the lives of the people around you. So you know, after my Wildwood initiation, I wrote my first book, you know, like it changed my life.
Yeah.
It changed my life completely. And so to be one of those people who was midwifing or who happened to be turned into a midwife, I don't fully know if I'll ever get it.
Yeah.
Like to be frank, you know, and when I, you know, cause there are covens of Wildwood witches in Amsterdam, there are initiates in Britain, in the US, like, and they've all been initiated in person. Like we do some distance training through Zoom, but we initiate always in person.
Yeah.
And of course, like any initiatory tradition, we don't pass money, you know, we don't like, it's all family. It's all covenant, you know? So it's complex. It's weird. I don't know. Sometimes I'm honestly overwhelmed by it.
I'm
overwhelmed by the power of it, and
I'm and
I see people, new initiates, grow into the tradition and tell me things about the tradition, and I'm like, holy shit, I never thought about it like that. You know, like, and so I'm always learning from people who were initiated after me. Always I'm like, wow, that's amazing that you see it that way, you know. And now there is a, you know, there are student, now there's several students who English is not their first language. So I'm beginning to see things in a different cultural lens too.
Which is beautiful, because that can add extra layers to your own sort of practice and like going back over different things when you originally.
And so, you know, while you're talking this whole time, I'm just sitting here and I know I'm not really interjecting with many questions, but I'm just listening to all the things you're saying. And I'm like, my brain just goes to this whole place of, I know on some level we started this podcast as a way of like helping educate other people, but I feel like in turn it's also educating me.
Yeah.
So I'm getting such an education from each and every guest that we have on this show, because like Vicky and all of our listeners will know, I've been soul searching for years about what is my path, what is my, you know, thing. And every time we talk to someone, I'm like, oh, maybe that's the one I need to like look into. And then talking to somebody else, oh, maybe that's the one I need to think. And it's so funny how listening to all these different paths, like what I'm fascinated about is the fact that you can wear many hats.
Totally.
And when, even when your writing style, like you can stay and you know, almost like to discern yourself and say, I know that when I talk in this manner, it's coming from Anderson Ferry. Whereas when I speak about this, it's coming from my reclaiming. Or when it's this, it's with an overlay of Wildwood. Like, how do you manage to decompartmentalize, or don't you?
Ah, that's that. I think I try to do both. So for me, when I have, I think it's helped that I have been initiated into multiple traditions for me to be able to track this way.
Yep.
So when I enter a tradition, I go, what I've tried to do in the past, like studying in different traditions, is be like, you are whole and complete unto yourself. I am humbled by coming into you. So yes, I'm bringing my whole self to the tradition, but in order to learn a tradition, in order to immerse in it, I have to know that I can't assume anything about it. And it's often true with witches and spirit workers who are being initiated in different traditions that we want to see the similarities. It's so human. We're like, oh, this is like this and this is like this. That's fine. Totally fine. And some of my most mystical understandings have come from those parallels. But just as interesting to me and just as important are the differences. And different traditions totally have different mysteries and different different cosmologies, but a witch is able to hold them all, you know, and be held by them all. So for me, it's important to be able to say, also for the benefit of the listener or the reader or myself, to be able to say, this is from here. and you know, I think crediting sources is totally necessary, especially in the occult and modern pagan witchcraft world, where a lot of people... Like one of my pet peeves is, I'm like, oh, okay, if you want to practice witchcraft, then I really hope that you actually study it. Mm-hmm. Like, where did that come from? Where did that come from? And who wrote that? And, you know, and pray, like, these are our mighty dead. We're standing on their shoulders. So like, if their work is watering your soul, then praise them, get to know them, because that, like, even the research is a form of devotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You
know? Just as like when we're researching the history or the whatever of a deity, that's devotion. That's time and energy spent in devotion. So for me, learning to, I wouldn't say compartmentalize, because that's not how it feels in my body, but learning to delineate, maybe. I sometimes say, you know how you have four chambers in your heart? I sometimes say that, you know, that each chamber is one of my traditions, you know. So and then you know, there's a chamber left for me, or there's a chamber left for mystery, or whatever. And I do think, though, that we're always just on the path that we're on. For me, I'm like, if you're interested in studying in a tradition, don't do it to find yourself. You've already got yourself. Do it because it mirrors you.
Mm-hmm.
Do it because also it challenges you. There's something in it that makes you go, oh, fuck. Like, if I go that way, I will be changed.
Yeah.
You know? And that's important. If it caused you because you're like, oh, this, it's going to change me and I know it. It's going to confront me. It's also going to offer me something I can't even feel. Like, sometimes it's irrational. Sometimes it doesn't make logical sense why we go down a certain road. And even while we're on the road, we question it, you know. And the road questions us, you know. The road also has sentience. So it's, sometimes I'll say, oh, you know, in a little bio or whatever, I'll say a polytraditional witch. There are some witches who are like, you can't be initiated. And I'm like, wow, that's a lack of imagination you have. It's like saying you can't be polyamorous, which is, we know, is bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And if anything, it just speaks to someone's, their own worldview and their own experience and conditioning and everything else that comes with it. Whereas I think as witches, we tend to, because we're constantly working in the shadows, and that kind of taking all this bullshit out of ourselves,
sure.
That we've learned from how we've been raised and whatever else, and the countries that we lived in and the stories that we've been told and, you know, the way that we're raised and whatnot. I think that it's innate to us to kind of constantly question. We're like, we are seekers in many, many, many ways. And one of those is to constantly question like paradigms and, you know, processes and stuff like that. But I know it made more sense in my head before it came out.
No, that makes total sense.
No, it did. It made total sense. Yeah.
So I'd love to also hear what is your experience as that? Because obviously some of our listeners are, may come from a tradition, whereas others may actually be self-initiated into a particular system, for lack of a better word. Yeah. And then others will just be like eclectic or kind of just, they don't really know where they sit.
Yeah.
And given that you've got experience sitting on both sides, as well as being one of the midwives of a tradition, like where have you, what advice could you give to someone who's sitting at that kind of crossroads of, do I seek out a tradition and be initiated? Do I do self-initiation or do I just stay as solitary?
Yeah.
You have a take on that?
I do. So this book that I'm writing that I finished the first draft, I have lots of edits to do, but the last chapter is called Initiation. And I discuss lots of these things, but my primary understanding of a witch is that actually we are initiated by the mystery itself. We are initiated by our spirits. So in that chapter, I have a ritual. A lot of people in the past used to argue, you can't initiate yourself, and I, to some extent, I agree, but it's it's witchcraft that initiates you. It's the mystery that initiates you. You know, people would say, oh, you can do a dedication ritual. I'm like, no, you can go alone as the only human into a forest, and if you can get the spirits to come, you can get initiated. Like, that is how many, like, if we're studying the witch trial records and we're like looking like Emma Wilby does through the folklore and the context and the culture of the time and looking at other like shamanistic spirit working cultures, it's obvious that these women and men and other gendered people in the past who were accused of being witches, some who were spirit workers, were meeting spirits, their familiar spirits, walking home after whatever they were doing. And this is what they're saying very clearly in the confessions.
Yeah.
And then they received, after making certain vows and agreements, they received certain powers, and they were able to do things and see things in a different way. That's an initiation. So I know, absolutely know, that you can go out in the darkness under the cloak of night as witches of old, and that you can take your black book, your witch's knife, your wand, whatever you feel you are being told to take, you are drawn to take, and you can go carve a circle or open the crossroads under some blasted tree or on the, you know, some in some strange place. Go to some strange place where you feel witchy as fuck. You've got to feel witchy as fuck. So do the things to get you there, you know, fast all day, be silent for 48 hours, like change your consciousness, which is, that's what we do. We go into trance and then go there and fucking call them and open to it. Open to the current of witchcraft and do it seriously, and it will change you. That's what I did. And I consider every formal lineage initiation I've had after that simply to be part of that. So, you know, it's all one witchcraft initiation to me. And when I'm initiating someone into a tradition, I always ask them a lot of questions about their spirits, about what they're feeling in their body, about how they're emotionally feeling. And usually it's before or after the formal ritual that I actually see initiation.
Yeah.
And most initiates will say that, you know, most initiates of any tradition or any mystical happening will say that. They'll go, we're looking for the actual initiation. Sometimes the ritual is the gravitas, is the anchor that gets it to happen, because it means that someone's dedicating time and space and emotion and power to surrender. Witchcraft initiation does require a risk, and it requires surrender. And so sometimes some people need to be with other people for that. They need to place their trust in another human. And this, unfortunately, is where a lot of shit can go wrong.
Yeah.
Because there have been too many instances that I could rattle off, or that I can see in my mind, or, you know, hear in my ears, of people who abuse their degrees or their initiatory status, or even pretend to have lineage when they don't, and then, you know, basically, yeah, abuse you. That happens, of course, in any human group. It happens in workplaces. It happens in governments. We know this. So it's not, witches aren't some, witches are very human. Yeah. And unfortunately, you can be a witch and be an asshole. That is unfortunately true.
Yes.
But there are a lot of witches who are very good, integrous people. Many, many, many. And you, and definitely ask a lot of questions. Ask a lot of questions about who you are. And ask other people, ask other known initiates of other traditions. Like if you're wanting to study with someone and you're beginning to feel suspicious of their credentials in that tradition, you need to go to people. Like, you can look it all up on Google. You can, you can go to other people and go, hey, so I know you're an initiate of this tradition. Do you know them? Are they a valid initiate of your lineage? You know, things like that. That's a thing that needs to happen more often. And someone, you know, they're obviously, we can't give away oath-bound things, but we can say, oh, yes, you know, go talk to so-and-so, go talk to so-and-so. I'm always suspicious of people who say things like, now, once you study with me, you can know, you can go to no other kinds of rituals. You have to stop everything you're practicing. You can't read any books. You, you know, that's weird.
Yeah.
You know, so, and there are people who do that. There are people who do that. And I'm sure they have all their magical reasons for that, but it is weird to me. I think it's weird. Frankly, that's my opinion. Like, really, you they shouldn't be saying that at all. Like, because you still have your stuff. Your practice is your practice. Your gods are your gods. And if you're learning a new tradition, really, it should relate to those things. And yes, of course, sometimes there does need to be a respectful partitioning. Like, some spirits don't, some families of spirits don't get along with other families of spirits. I have different shrines for different reasons. But, you know, it is all happening in one body. So it does have to kind of relate on some level. Otherwise, I don't know if it's relevant. So, yeah, it's a complex world. Be very, rather than being paranoid, just be aware that there are, that there are assholes. I think some of the best advice I ever got from my mum was, Theo, there are assholes in the world.
Truth.
And it is.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's true. And there are people who will take advantage of open-hearted, generous people who are seeking. I want there to be more thorough, vibrant people offering training, whether it's public, which is one of the reasons I offer public training in witchcraft skill, because there are people who even go through coven training who, they come out of it and they don't have the skill. And I'm like, you should have it, you know? Like, you don't need to commit to a teacher, a lineage, a tradition to have some of these skills. So I, you can, there's also many classes out there, courses, classes, intensives. And yes, like, we, many of us charge money for them because they're public, you know? And you can engage them. You know, also, I always am open to you having, like, I always have solidarity spaces, which means no money passes between us for courses. I also have, you know, most teachers will do this. Public teachers will do this. I also have, always have a sliding scale. I also have solid scholarship places that other people pay for people who can't afford to. Like, that's what being in a community is. Like, if you really want to study with someone, you can do it. You know, and sometimes the exchange of money is simply the way that in that moment that person is dedicating to it. You know, it depends on the context. It always depends on the context.
I love this because you're touching on so many of the little nuggets that we've planted across multiple episodes now. Like when we talk about like questioning people in positions of power, we discussed that when we did an episode on love and magic and love and sex magic, and like, you know, how it's, you need to have consent and it's okay to say no and all that kind of stuff. And you touched on it there. And then when we talked about like, can witches charge for things? I'm pretty sure we've discussed that in previous episodes about putting aside the bullshit and saying like, just because it's a spiritual practice doesn't mean that you can't charge for it, because it's still a service and you still, there's some kind of
witches
an exchange.
Always charge for things.
Right.
Yeah, you know,
there are some things we don't charge for, but there are some, there are many things we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah,
that's okay.
That's all right.
It's totally okay. Yeah. There was one other thing I was going to touch on, which that you said. Oh, yes, about initiation. And that's the thing is that a lot of people forget, and I think it's an important thing that you highlighted in what you said, is that initiation, even by definition, etymologically speaking, it means to initiate, to start. Yes. So when you said that people often don't feel that change or that thing until after their formal initiation, well,
sure,
it makes sense because that's when you're actually, okay, the engine's on now. Now yeah. we go. But obviously you have to do the pre-work before you get to that point. It's like, you're not just going to jump in a front seat of a car and start driving before you do all the study and all the hours totally. To get your license. Totally. So it's like anything else, but no, I think that was beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Like, we can literally just throw you a question and you can go for like ages and you're making my job so much easier. I love this. So oh, yeah. No, that was actually, that wasn't shade. That was legit. No. That was good.
It's true though. I can just keep talking.
And it's good. It's good.
But it's such a beautiful poetic way that really does. You have a beautiful way with words that touches beyond just that kind of surface of words. Mm. Like it's more a felt sense of when you speak
and,
as well.
And do you know, it's funny because, and this is me being completely candid with you. Your name has been suggested to us by a couple of our guests to bring you on the show. And I kept saying no at that time, yep. because I think that on some level, I wasn't ready to hear what you had to say. And that's just being completely candid with you. I think because I needed to evolve myself in my understanding of practice and my own craft and my own, you know, what this podcast is about before I think, I almost feel like there's a responsibility to take the listeners and the viewers on a bit of a journey, give them some bread and butter before we throw them into this melting wild pot mysticism. Of because but in all honesty,
I'm glad that you listened to that, you know, that's good that you listened to those instincts.
Well, yeah, because like I always knew, because my path has crossed with you years ago, and I always knew that I know that you have interesting things to say, because I think I watched you do an interview with, I think maybe Buck interviewed you when it was for Roots and Bones. It would have been about ecstatic witchcraft and all that kind of stuff. So I know that you had very interesting things to say, but at that time when I heard it, my brain couldn't compute it because I hadn't been exposed to the right things to understand it. Does that make sense? Whereas
totally,
I think
I've been criticized by several people for writing in a more poetic way, but unfortunately or unfortunately, it's just the way I communicate. So I do think that, because I mean, some of it's intentional, some of it's more just how I am, some of it, the intentional part of it is exactly for the reason you said, because I know that the language of witchcraft is poetry or art, like it's poetry or art, and so if you got to be in the right place to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because some of the things I'm communicating are the mysteries as I know them. And they will only compute when someone is in them.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I think so thank you. Definitely. Thank you for being truly authentically you, because that I think that now, by the time this will have aired, this would have been, we've been doing this for what, a year and a bit now, right, Vicky?
Yeah.
I know we've got a lot of listeners and viewers that have been following us on this journey. Even some that have joined us later on in the game have gone back to square one. That's and amazing. They've come across this journey with us. So by the time they get to this video or recording, I know that they would have like had that kind of learning experience to get to this conversation. So I think it's definitely going to resonate on a lot deeper level with a lot of our listeners now than what it would have had we done this a year ago.
Yeah. Smart.
Yeah. Thanks. So I would like to bring us to your book though, because obviously as we've dropped little hints and crumbs, little spoilers and whatnot. But so what time frame are we looking at for it to be released? And does it have a title or anything yet? Or is it still a work in progress?
It does have a title, but I'm not going to say it yet.
That's okay.
Because I need to have a conversation with my editor and a whole range of things. But it's the book I've been trying to write for 4 years. And writing this, so basically six and a half weeks ago, I had an amazing astrological consultation with my friend Kim Fairminer, amazing, amazing astrologer. And she was like, honey, you got to write this book or you won't write it. Like, I turned 33 this year, which means I'm in a 10th house year in terms of perfection. So, and also the ruler of my 10th house is Scorpio, which is the ruled by Mars traditionally. So she was like, you need to channel Mars. Enough of this Saturn shit. You're always about Saturn. And I was like, yeah, I know. I love Saturn so much. But Mars, you have to channel Mars. And I was like, okay. And I did this weird thing where I just decided to write 1,500 words a day And I just did it. And but I couldn't have done that if I didn't gestate this book for 4 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've been struggling with it because I haven't written a book on my own for 10 years. This year marks 10 years since I've written a book alone, because the books that have come out since Ecstatic Witchcraft came out in 2012 have, which is kind of at that point the what I had to offer at that time, I've written with Jane Meredith in specifically books about reclaiming magic. Mm-hmm. Magic of the Iron Pentacle and Elements of Magic. They're both core classes of reclaiming. But this book is a whole other thing, and it's really intense. And it's very erotic. It's very transgressive. It's very occult. The way I'm writing it is as a grimoire, but not like a working book, but like a love spell. Like the book is a spell. The book is a spell. So, and it's set up as a spell. So when you read it and you go through the exercises, you're doing a giant mythic spell.
I love that.
And it's basically to take you into witchcraft, to deepen your understanding of what witchcraft has been, is, and will be.
Yeah. So feel free to say yes, even if the answer's no, but would you recommend that people read your other works before they get to that book?
Oh, I don't know. Like I actually don't know the answer to that. I think some people could come straight to this book. Mm-hmm. Like it depends on the constitution, right? I think if you have an astrological chart dominated by air, you'd need to read some other books. But if you have an astrological chart dominated by fire and water, like mine is, you can read this book. But, you know, certainly even before my other books, there are other books I recommend to people, like certainly Elements of Magic, which is a book actually that I edited with Jane Meredith, which was a lot of work, but it has like 35 voices in it. That's a book that if you're new and you want structure and you want you want to understand what it might be to learn in a tradition, then that's the book, because it gives you all you need to set up your own ritual practice, your own understanding of what witchcraft is today. That book is such a good beginner's book. But then there are other books, like by my friend Lee Morgan, which I would be like A Deed Without a Name. Go read that book. I always recommend that book to anyone who wants to understand the folkloric traditional witchcraft that I love. And then there are a range of other books, but, you know, like Doreen Valiente. Go read Doreen Valiente and things like that. Phoenix Lefay is a dear friend of mine and has written powerful, beautiful books that are like no bullshit, straight shooting, but also so poetic. Like there's all these books, but I don't know. This book is a standalone book, I don't know. It's like the book that I can't wait to put out, but I'm also terrified.
Especially if you're writing as a bit of a love spell, like to spirit or whatnot, for lack of a better phrase. I can understand why there'd be that little bit of like, when you're birthing something gestating something for 4 years, and then to actually put it out in the world, because you've put a lot of blood, sweat, tears, emotion, power, passion, whatever you want into that. So then to release it, because that's obviously like in anything in life, as soon as we present that, it's almost like presenting a part of yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
And you're putting it out there for scrutiny. So like, I applaud you for having the gusto to do
that. Yeah, that's it.
Because that's like a whole another layer of soul bearing right there.
It's complicated.
Yeah. So when is the approximate, when are we looking at the release happening?
Book publication is strange. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, like it's going to be like at least a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a thing that I'm going to start to actually tell people about.
Yeah.
I've been very silent and you know, as we do with magic, I've been very silent. But today was the day. It just so happened today was the day that I finished the first draft. So I was like,
yay.
I can tell these lovely witches.
Yes, it can be out there. Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, if you're trying to keep it secret, we'll try to keep it as played as we can. But I mean, we've only got around about 15,000 people currently listening to us at the moment. So we'll try to keep it with just us and our closest 15,000 friends. You know what I mean?
Today is the day. You know, like I thought, I literally was like an hour before I came on here, I went, oh my God, I think I'm done.
It's done.
And then I went over to my partner and I hugged him. And I mean, he finished his BhD last year. So he got it. But yeah, and then I was like, and now I'm going to go talk to these lovely witches. Oh my God. Like it just feels seamless.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
The beautiful progression.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing that we didn't invite you till now. Yes.
It was perfect. It's an interesting synchronicity. I just trust those things.
Well, I think we're definitely going to have to invite you back again when we're closer to launch date to do the big.
Yeah, that would be
fun.
Yeah.
I'd love to be part of that experience with you and help you get that word out.
So fun.
Awesome.
I'd love it.
Well, I think it's been absolutely beautiful having you on the show. Vicky, was there anything else you wanted to ask?
No, we're getting out of time. I mean, there's a million other things I could ask, but I know that we can't go forever, but it's been absolutely wonderful chatting to you. No, that's right. It's been absolutely wonderful chatting. Yeah, that's right.
Thank you so much once again for the beautiful acknowledgement of country at the start of today. And then for taking us on this most poetic of journeys, explaining everything. Like, I know I've come out of this learning a lot, and I know that anyone else listening and watching is going to echo those sentiments. So thank you once again. So everyone, until we hear from you or see you next time, I hope you all have an amazing time, and hopefully we all get out of lockdown soon. But on that note, I'll speak to you all soon.
Bye.
Bye.